welcome to Moving Target, my Rockfin exclusive, broadcasting live from T-Lab Studios. Joining me today is Courtney Turner from the Courtney Turner podcast. And we're joining today to talk about a few different things. One of them was the fact that we have a very interesting story her story is very inspiring. And I'm going to let her talk about that. But it was an interesting overlap with something that I went through in my life that I actually talked about with Scott the very first time that we discussed, had an interview way back when. And I just thought it was really interesting that the overlap and what that has done personally in my life, driving me to take certain actions to wanting to fight for the underdog. And I thought it was interesting how that inspired me. And I'd like you guys to hear her story as well and how that has driven her actions and the overlap today, especially as we get into beginning to start Pirate Street Media and where that's going to be going. But in general, we're also going to talk about censorship and what she's gone through and a lot of other things. But Courtney, how are you today?
I'm doing well today. Thank you. How are you?
Good, good, good. And joining us, by the way, is Sierra Vagabond, which I'm sure she'll be poking her head up here and there. You guys can all see. I actually just started an Instagram account for her.
Oh,
just,
yay!
I went back and forth on whether I wanted to do it or not. Right. Like, I felt like I'm exploiting her or something. But I just was like, she's so adorable and has so many. And even funnier, she's like a contrarian. Like, she's very, like, things that she's, like, I'm jokingly, like, challenging paradigms already. Like, you know what she's doing, like, walking herself and things like that. But
that's
very
awesome.
Funny.
Yeah, she's so sweet.
She is. She is. And I think, but, you know, anyway, I talk about Sierra Vagabond for an entire podcast.
Yeah.
But, no, but I was really inspired by your story, which I actually just saw at a recent event that you had, mm-hmm. where you did your performance, which was really interesting, by the way. I don't know if my audience knows that you do that. I'll let you explain what that is and how you got into it. But it was really interesting to see, and it was a very touching story. So why don't you go into what that was and what you went through, and as well as explain what acrobatics, is that the right
aerial
way to say it?
Aerial acrobatics, yeah.
And what that is and why you do that as well. And, you know, let's start wherever you want.
Sure. All right. Well, yes, I'm Courtney Turner. I'm the host of the Courtney Turner podcast. My story is kind of unique. As it goes is that my mother was sick during the first trimester of pregnancy. And, you know, I always say this with a little qualifier because those who've watched my podcast know I've gone, you know, pretty deep down the rabbit hole of germ and terrain theory. Mm-hmm. So, but I'll share the story because I think the story is relevant and it's interesting and it shapes a lot of, you know, who I am today. Mm-hmm. So the story is that my mom was sick during first trimester of pregnancy. Her doctor, the OBGYN wife, when traveling, got sick. My dad was sick about 10 days later. Both of them were diagnosed with, the doctor's wife was diagnosed with germ measles. Mm. And my father was pretty sure that that's what he had. My mom, he was really sick, like had a fever of 104, was delirious, really, really sick. My mom, about 10 days later, has very mild symptoms, like a, you know, little rash on her upper chest and, you know, some very mild symptoms. But she was pretty concerned because she knew she was pregnant. Mm. And so she starts doing all sorts of research, you know, probably where I get this from.
Right. You know? So conspiracy theorist already, right? Doing research, right?
Yeah, exactly. She already set the tone right. While I was in the womb. And so she starts doing all this research and she's pretty sure that she has germ measles. And so she goes to the doctor. Doctor tests the titer. So for those who mm-hmm. don't know, the titer tells you the levels of antibodies. So the idea was that she would test to see whether or not the baby, me, was afflicted or if, you know, she might have had some, but I'd be okay. The doctor read the titer as being 112. But the doctor was dyslexic, so the titer was really 121.
That's ridiculous. What an interesting addition to the story. Like,
yeah. The titer being 112 would mean that I was totally fine, unaffected. 121, not so much. So when I was born, they knew that the doctor was dyslexic and had made a mistake. And so the hospital is covering up left and right for this doctor. And my mom starting to realize that were some things that, you know, didn't quite look right and asked them to do all sorts of testing and they kept denying it. Everything's normal, quote unquote, normal.
Interesting overlap to where we are today too, right? Which I'm sure you point out. Yeah,
totally. Everything's normal, you know? So, you know, she did a couple of some of the main ones that people might know were like the TORCH test. R stands for rubella, which is germ measles. Mm-hmm. You know, said the bilirubin test. But the main thing she really noticed was that one of my eyes was rolling up on the top of my head. Mm. And they kept saying, oh, don't worry about it. Baby's eyes don't focus. And she said, well, one eye focuses, so why doesn't the other one?
Yeah.
It doesn't really make so much sense. So after much, you know, denial from the hospital, she starts to search around different doctors trying to figure out. She's, you know, a mother's intuition. She's pretty sure something's not quite right.
Right.
And she finally determined that my left eye looked a lot like her father. So my maternal grandfather, and he had just had cataracts. So she finally found a doctor who confirmed that I had a cataract. I was born with a cataract in my left
really
eye.
Really interesting.
And they had to operate. Now, cataract procedure back then was very different than it is now. You know. Yeah. So now it's a pretty routine procedure and a lot of people have no issues. But they pulled the iris and they left debris behind the retina. So they had to go do what was called a retinal cleanup. When they did this, this is a few months after that procedure. When they did this, they found rubella pigmentation behind the sighted eye and they diagnosed me with congenital rubella. At that point in time, they had determined that I was going to be completely blind, deaf, autistic, retarded. I don't mean these in a, you know, as a slander, the, you know, clinical terms.
Right.
You know, that my, there was going to be no hope for me. The best that she could hope was to find a nice institution for me to spend my life. And when I tell the story, what they actually really told her was it's really a shame that Geraldo Rivera did the expo doing away with the institutions, you know, under Reagan, because that really would have been the perfect place for me to spend my life.
What a sad thing to be hearing. I mean, I just, you know, again, I'll get to my overlap. Yeah. I just feel like it's just imagining a parent being told that. In that moment is just crushing. I mean, it's just a sad story.
Crushing. And, I think being especially, I'm the oldest. I have one younger sister. But I think being a new mom, right, that's you don't really get a manual for how to be a parent. So right. I think there's already so many unknowns. There's so, you know, all this kind of like anxiety and fear because you want to do a job. You're bringing a life into the world.
Right,
you know,
right.
And I know my mom really wanted to be a mom. So I think. I can just imagine for her, and I'm very close to her, so I always feel like I can feel what she's going through, you know? And
I think it's because of this. I really do.
I think in a lot of ways it is probably because of this. You know, we were, I think in a lot of ways forced to be closer. I think we would have probably been very close anyway.
Right.
But certainly, yes.
Was there any indication this was happening before you were born? Like that there was a problem, or was it only there was a problem discovered after you were born?
No, she really, from what she's told me, the pregnancy was actually pretty easy. There was no kind of, other than her having that one rash and she had those mild symptoms, but it was first trimester. And I think that's why she was more concerned. Had it been second, third trimester, there would be less likelihood of me being afflicted.
I asked because that's where my part of my experience with my mom was all prior to me being born. And but the reason I ask is because it's interesting that you know, however you want to frame it, not just spiritual energy, you know, that the idea of trying to like do, you know, pass your energy into the unborn child to like save it from something that seems insurmountable, you know, like whether that has an effect. It's an interesting thought, but I'll get to that in a second. But
yeah. And I definitely have a lot of thoughts on that, you know, and I've really, because I've gone down this like germ theory rabbit hole.
Yeah.
I've had a lot of thoughts about what could be going on during that time.
But
all that to say that what we did find out is that, you know, yes, I was born with, you know, what they diagnosed as congenital rubella. And my mom fortunately did not take the diagnosis as or the prognosis as face value. You know, she really didn't believe it.
Shouldn't after what they've done so far.
They're not the authorities on everything.
They read the word backwards, you know.
Based on track record, maybe they got some things wrong.
Yeah.
And I don't really think it actually had anything to do with that, although that would be interesting for me to ask her. I think it was more just, you know, she was watching me and she's like, I don't believe this. You know, I think that she's got a lot more. I think she could see pretty early that, you know, the intelligence was there, the drive was there. And she really just believed I was going to be okay. But pretty early on, they did know that the vision was an issue. And they later found out that my hearing was an issue. But I actually didn't get hearing aids until I was almost 6 years old because I learned how to speak by reading lips.
That's interesting.
which made the last 2 years with the mask incredibly difficult for me.
Yeah.
Even though I wear hearing aids now, it's still, I depend a lot on lip reading and, you know, body language and nonverbal cues. So for the clarity of speech. So.
Right. It's just disgusting that they try to argue that has no effect on babies these days. I mean, it's, if it's affecting you, I mean, God, imagine.
IQs have dropped like 20%.
Yeah. Like every other story, it's clear that it's being proven that it's obviously hurting them and they're just saying the opposite.
Bold-faced lie, and we're just supposed to believe it.
Yeah.
You know, just believe your lying eyes, you know, don't believe the data.
Yeah.
So I was also born with a heart condition and I had to have heart surgery when I was about a year old. I was born with pentatonic limbs, fine graphic motor impairment, stunted growth, a bunch of dental complications. And they were like, there's going to be absolutely no hope for her. But fortunately, my mom went about like, my mom, my grandfather really went through like all sorts of, I guess what we would call alternative type treatments.
Right. Which is probably why you're doing so well.
Yeah.
You know, seriously. I genuinely think that.
No, I definitely attribute it to their hard work, investigation, and the support, you know, that they didn't give up on me.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's, you know, there's a huge part that I think energy plays in this, where whether like from the side of like unborn child versus afterward, you know, your mom was still, you know, as a baby, like trying to even just take it to the simplest point of thinking positive. It has an effect. And I think we all know that. Right. No, so the fact that she's trying to believe that you're going to be OK, like I would argue that had a huge effect on, you know, like if you had accepted that this was going to be that way, or she had that might have just been willing that into reality. You know, I really believe that.
No, absolutely. And, you know, it's not just the I think it starts with the thought processes, but it's the actions that followed. Yeah, because
totally.
My mom started working with, like I was saying, also these alternative modalities. So we were really fortunate. We had a baby nurse and her name was Alice. I mean, I'm eternally grateful to her. But when they determined I had hypotonic limbs, it was affecting. So for those who don't know, you know, hypertrophy is when the bros go to the gym and they build their muscles, right? mine was the opposite. Like the muscles were not developing, which was affecting me hitting my milestones very early, like just turning over. I couldn't do because I didn't have the strength. And so they put me, but my baby nurse Alice had this idea to put me in a wet sandbox. She said she could see I had a really determined personality, and she said babies love sand. So she just put her in a wet sandbox and put her toys slightly out of reach. So she was forced to go and reach for the toys.
That kind of outside the box thinking, like it just, you know, it doesn't, the way that people in the medical industry think today is it's very regimented, you know, like where this is what you're supposed to do and what you're allowed to do. You know, that probably wouldn't even happen today.
It turns out it's an old school occupational therapy technique, which I think is much better than today, because today a lot of medicine is driven by, you know, Rockefeller medicine. So it is really, it's driven by a pharmaceutical solution. So doctors are not really encouraged, even if they have the ability. They're not encouraged to think outside the box. They're encouraged to kind of play like, it's almost like a game of, I don't know if you played this as a kid, memory, but it's like find the pair.
Yep.
And that's what it is. It's like, okay, so we have to find the diagnosis and then we find the treatment for that.
And what did the CDC say we're supposed to do? Or what did my teacher tell me I was supposed to do? It's insert the blunt, you know, instead of understanding the problem. There are plenty of doctors, I think, that are smart enough to understand, but most of these people that are just going through the motions are just taught, you see this, you give them this pill. You know, and I've had doctors tell me that's exactly what happens, you know, that are in the industry. It's very sad.
It's not lack of intelligence. It's that they're seeped in a paradigm and this is their training and they're trained to do this. And now today, what they would do for someone like me is probably put me in a full body brace because here's the solution. And then all of my muscles would have atrophied.
Right. Right. You know, an interesting overlap there is that, you know, I mean, there's so many parallels to this entire thing, to what we're seeing today versus, you know, what we see there and like the way that they're trained. And, you know, it's just sad that these people think they're doing the right thing.
They do.
You know, it's like today with the media or the government saying, like, believing that research is what, just looking at what the authorities say or what they're supposed to think, or the CDC. And it's the same idea, you know, is that they genuinely think, well, this is the right pill we're supposed to give, instead of asking if there's other ways to go or if there's side effects, or it's just sad.
Or looking at the individual.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
Because I've actually now met other quote unquote rubella babies. You know, I mean, we can argue it's a collection of symptoms. They all have very simple, similar symptoms to me. And a lot of them are not as high functioning at all. And it's really sad to see. Now, some of it could just be, you know, we're all born with different skills and talents, and
everybody's different. Everybody, everyone's different.
And, you know, who knows what they would have been like, you know, if they had been perfectly healthy. You know, they could have just been less, you know, functioning. Entirely possible.
I'm convinced it's because of your mom, the energy and the direction and the belief that that wouldn't be the case.
And that they challenged me constantly.
Right.
So, you know, like some of the other things they did were give me these like eye exercises that I had to do for 2 hours every day. My mom came up with this idea of creating, essentially it was a balance beam. My grandfather built it where I wore a patch over my sighted eye every other day of my childhood. So I was essentially blind and deaf because I didn't have hearing aids yet. And so that affects your vestibular sense and it affects your proprioception, your depth perception. And they had me walk on this balance beam. And my reward at the end of the week, whether I had my patch on or not, I had to complete it for the full week. And if I did, they made the beam narrower. That was my reward.
See? Yeah, that's it's so powerful to see, like, you know, because really, if they listen to the doctor, that would they would believe that there's no point in doing that, that it's not possible, right? I mean, it's just
too dangerous.
It's inspiring to see that they're, you know, that we need to, people need to think outside the damn box today. You know, there's so many things out there. Like, I always make this point about, like, basketball. High level athletes.
Yeah.
That you'll, if you look into what they do when they have a serious problem, is not what we're talking about here. They don't go to the doctor in the Western medicine's field. No. They go to the, you know, like I pointed out, I use the example of what's his name? I'm blanking on his name all of a sudden. Peyton Manning. Okay. About how he broke his neck. Broke his neck and came back the next season and had the best year of his life. Like, what medicine are these people talking about? Like, you don't break your neck and even play football again, let alone have the best year of your life. So he had, obviously wasn't, you could find more severe versions and so on. Sure. But the fact is they have different versions. They go overseas. They find new holistic versions of, you know, the real way, training your body to heal itself and that kind of thing. It's very, very interesting. I had a question about, before I get into like how my experience overlaps with that. So that would have been when you were born. So were you, do you know if you were given the MMR vaccine?
I was not because they determined that I had antibodies. Right?
Okay.
I was
interesting.
General rubella.
I was just curious if there was that, you know, maybe there was an overlap there. Now that you say that though, it's connected because this is a titer antibody question, but I wanted your thoughts on this. It's really interesting that we have this, more people than ever seem to be, and rightly so, understanding or trying to, the way the body works in this regard, what antibodies are, what titers are, what that means, how the immune system works, T cell, memory B, all this stuff. And what I'm finding interesting is that, so as far as I understand it, and I've been doing my research on this, is that antibodies are produced when your body recognizes the threat. Mm-hmm. So you've dealt with it before or some version of something. And so your body goes, oh, that's that thing. Yeah. So put out the antibodies, right? But you're not supposed to be pumping out antibodies all your life. No. In fact, you shouldn't be even having them in your system unless there's a problem, I would argue, right? And that's where T cell memory B comes in, right? No. In different ways.
Sure.
But so why does a titer make sense then? How do you test for something if your body's not dealing with that problem? Does that mean you have residual antibodies?
That's the theory.
That doesn't add up to me though. Like, because
theory is quite flawed.
Yeah.
I interviewed Dr. Andy Kaufman. Kaufman.
Right.
I always say it wrong. It's Kaufman.
Kaufman?
It is Kaufman. And I asked him actually right before I interviewed him. And then I got on, you know, we turned the recording on and I said it wrong. And I was like, I just asked you. And then I say it wrong.
I think I said Kaufman. I didn't even know it was different.
But I interviewed him and he talked a little bit about this. And, you know, the problem is there's just so much that we just don't know. And
exactly.
I really fault both sides, you know, not necessarily him, because he doesn't claim to have the rebuttal.
I respect that about his comments, for sure.
He's like, I'm poking holes in their claim. Mm-hmm, you know, I'm pointing out where their claim doesn't line up.
Right.
You know, and I respect that. You know, you can reject the premise without offering, here's the alternative.
Exactly.
And he doesn't. He really acknowledges that there's a lot we really don't know. And I kind of agree. I think both sides are a little bit dogmatic, unfortunately, which is not helpful because there is just so much about the human body we really don't know. And they're talking about things you really can't see. So with bacteria, And I think even bacteria, there's so much we still don't know or fully understand.
Right.
But with quote unquote viruses, you can't see them. So they're making, you know, theoretical models around right. something that we have no way to really prove.
Right.
And so then how can you say that with definitive conclusivity that is exactly what the model claims it is?
Right. I mean, and that's just simple objectivity. Like this is the same point you're saying on Kaufman, is that you're not saying this is the case. We're just simply saying here's a valid reason that we should be able to question, or you're always able to question it, but a valid reason why somebody should question this, you know, and that's important because you're right. I mean, and I think we've talked about this before that I tend to think, based on talking to Kaufman numerous times and you know, and the other side of the conversation. And I've interviewed plenty of high level experts that very clearly are rooted in germ theory, you know, and it seems that there's a lot of questions on both sides. And so it might very well be something that nobody truly understands. And like, for instance, as you pointed out, bacteria. Mm-hmm. Now that even Kaufman brings this up in multiple interviews with me, that that's one of the caveats essentially, because that does exist within terrain theory. Right. Mm-hmm. And so,
although there are a lot of terrain theory people who deny that bacteria has any deleterious effects.
Right. And that makes sense because that's the counter to point I was about to make. And that, you know, makes sense. But I don't even think Kaufman argues that. Right. There are negative effects to the bacteria that you can see and prove. I think at least that's what he said.
Yeah.
And maybe that's evolved. But I think the point was that if that's the case, that bacteria can cause things that can be spread and so on. We're just using different names for things. It's ultimately the same structure.
But he talks about it in terms of balance. It's more about balance because
that's the terrain idea, right? Your health is more than just
the bacteria and how it's balanced out by other bacteria.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And exactly. And this just basically, it all leads into the idea, whether we understand it or not, that you need to be healthy, that you need to take care of yourself. You need to wash yourself. You need to eat right. Exercise. It's all, you know, it's so simple and comes to the same point. But
take care of your own mental health.
Yes, mental too. Right.
Yeah, mental, emotional health is really important. I think it's the root of so much disease. You know, it's dis-ease. And, you know, what was it, Hippocrates, who said all disease starts in the gut? And we believe that very literally because you have more neurotransmitters in your gut than you do in your brain. But I think it's also figuratively because we think of the gut as like, you know, kind of the solar plex of the emotional center.
Yeah, right? Like I feel it in my gut. Yeah, yeah,
we say that all the time. And I think that it does. I think we're finding more and more that we store so much trauma physically in our bodies.
Yeah.
And I think that does manifest itself in disease, if not dealt with over time. You know, that in Chinese medicine, they say that, you know, by the time something manifests itself physically, physiologically, it's been like way, way long been percolating.
That makes sense.
Think that it really starts with a lot of emotional. They have one branch of Chinese medicine talks about like allergies to emotions.
Interesting. Yeah.
It's NAET. And it's kind of a allergy therapy technique. And they do a lot of work with not just, you know, environmental or food allergies, but they do emotional allergies.
Interesting.
And they have a lot to do with trauma.
That's so interesting. Like that doesn't even almost make sense when you think about it, unless you understand that there is an overlap to it, you know, that these things definitely connect. Yeah. And it's so interesting. I mean, there's so many challenges to traditional Chinese medicine, to the Western medicine. I mean, it's literally counterintuitive when you really break it down. I mean, I make this joke. I always forget to credit it to, I think it was Melissa Dykes from Truth Stream Media, but that makes this joking analogy about, you know, we're going to look back in 100 years, 50 years, maybe a year from now, who knows, and be like, oh my God, remember what we used to do back in Western medicine? We give ourselves pills and poisons and cut things off our body and call it medicine. You know, it's like, that's really what we're doing, you know, like chopping things off. And, you know, it's like, it's just so grotesque and almost archaic when you think about it, when you should train your body to heal itself.
You know, I really think that there is a place for a beautiful synthesis.
Oh, I agree. I mean, there's sometimes it's necessary. Extreme.
A lot of modern medicine.
Yeah.
And a lot of my survival and thriving, it really is, you know, due to modern medicine.
So right, right.
I don't, you know, demonize all of modern medicine.
Oh, yeah. In no way am I saying that either. I mean, again, it's always a middle ground.
It's like a toolbox. Why wouldn't you pick out the best tools for that situation? And
there's also the other caveat, though, and this is one of the reasons I feel like I'm, whether, you know, thinking about it and like feeling it out right now, that it's because of the distrust, which is not, which is all they want you to think about now. It's, oh, we lost trust by doing what we thought was right. That's not what's happening. No. You lost trust a long time ago because you're lying and cheating and stealing, but that's there today. So it's hard to feel like we can trust the tools if they're doing. Like, I just feel like you're right, though. It's a middle ground, and we should be objectively considering all possibilities. And always, it should be your choice to decide for your family and your personal, you know, body what you do exactly. But yeah, it's interesting though. I think we need to open our minds, and I think that's what this whole situation has done to everything, even the craziest possibilities, because we're beginning to see that those may in fact be the most important. I think, you know, whether it's, I mean, cannabis is an example I always point to, because even someone actually even just commented on it yesterday, a follower of mine, and said, and I just responded meaner than I should. I don't think he was trying to be mean. I always reflect on that. I'm like, I hate the way I respond on Twitter. but he basically was like, why do you diminish your credibility constantly by, you know, talking about the cannabis being this or that? And I'm like, man, it's just, I can't even believe that there's still people out there that don't understand how much we've been misled about cannabis specifically, but in general. And the point was about the overlap with COVID-19. Mm-hmm. And there's numerous peer-reviewed studies that have found cannabidiol has very obvious and provable effects specifically on whatever we say this is, you call it COVID or whatever else. Mm-hmm. And he just said that was, you know, not honest peer-reviewed science. I'm like, what does that even mean? You're just picking and choosing which one. My point was simply that it's just there are so many things out there that are still attacked that are very important. And that's just the tip of the iceberg, you know?
Yeah, for sure. So just to quickly explain aerial acrobatics.
Oh, yeah, go ahead. So, I'm glad you said that. I would have forgot.
So as a result of the balance beam training that I did as a kid.
Keep going. I'll bring this up on the screen.
I fell in love with gymnastics. I had, you know, when I was about 4 years old, I went to day camp. And when I saw the beam in the gymnasium, I ran over to it and I was all excited and I fell in love with the sport. And we'll fast forward without telling you the entire, you know, many years in between. But I tried out for American Ninja Warrior.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I remember that.
And it was the first time I had publicly shared my story. And it was actually an accident that happened. But the result of that was that, you know, a lot of people had said that they were very inspired by my story. And that kind of propelled me to create the show, When What Is Movement. But nice. When I was training for American Ninja Warrior, I have very, very small hands. I don't know if you guys can see. I have very small hands. So a lot of Ninja Warriors, grip strength. You're holding on to things. And that's the whole point, is that you don't fall into the water. And if your hands are smaller, you have less surface area. So it requires that much more strength to compensate. You know, so somebody who has a bigger, like, especially if they have really long fingers, they can grip the longer without having as much, you know, and as much strength. I mean, they still need strength, but you know, just proportionally the ratio. So I was trying to build my grip strength, and it did not come naturally to me. But I remembered when I was in New York, I had seen people at clubs do this silks, which essentially like what people do in Cirque du Soleil.
All right.
I saw them doing this at club. Mm-hmm. And I remember turning to, I call him my brother. He was my manager who I put in business in New York when I was an actress. And I turned to him and I said, I could do that. And he's like, I booked her. I'm like, what is she making? It's like a 3-minute performance. Mm-hmm. Right? He's like, oh yeah, she made $200. I'm like, sign me up. And so when I was training, I was trying to figure out ways I could build my grip strength. And I thought, well, it must be pretty hard to grab onto silks and hang there and hold, you know. So I thought that would be a great way to build grip strength. So I started doing that. And then I started like moving into all the other different apparatus. And it was kind of like gymnastics in the air and, you know, a combination of gymnastics and dance. And I was a backup dancer. So I was like, I love this.
Yeah. Also, if you were a dancer before, then you already have the upper body strength probably, or the strength that's in some ways.
Gymnastics. Dance doesn't have that much upper body strength. But
no. Well, I always thought that it gave you like the mid, maybe the wrong term. Strength. Yeah. Yeah. And I just remember seeing, like, I showed them a picture of I thought I had the video. I'm going to get that for you when we're done so I can include it in the show notes, because it's cool to watch. But like the, you know, the Cirque du Soleil was a good example. Yeah. Anyone that's seen that will know the way they, you know, slide down the silk and wrap their leg and swing. It's crazy. Like it takes incredible strength, and it always overlaps in my mind to the martial arts, but what do you call it? The ninja show,
American Ninja Warrior,
the martial arts part of it where they do the, you know, essentially they can go down the pole and like stick themselves straight out with just their arms, you know, and like that whole thing. And just, I can't even, anyone try to do that right now, you'll realize how hard and possible that is unless you train for it. So it's a lot
of
strength.
People don't know that pole dancing actually originated from a Chinese martial art.
Oh, really? didn't know that. I thought you were going to say that it takes a lot of strength, because it does.
It does. Yeah, yeah. I have done pole as well. Yeah, it definitely does. But yeah, it originates from a Chinese martial art, wushu.
Interesting. That's interesting. I mean, it makes sense when you think about it, because it's the same kind of overlap.
Totally.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, yeah. So, I mean, for me, just the reason that I saw the performance and the speech that she gave, and I'll include this in the show notes so you guys can check it out, because it's worth watching. That I I've shared this before, but just briefly, so we can get into some other stuff that's interesting as well. That, I mean, my experience that I've shared in the past was that my mother had a pretty traumatizing experience where, long story short, she went through all these problems, and then they were forced to induce delivery, C-section, and so on. And the quickest way to say it is that I was about as premature as like possible. Like, it was like I was like this tiny little thing, and they were just like, okay, you know, it was, I'm probably going to die, you know, it's most likely. And then after engaging and you know, studying and testing me with the doctors, they told my mom, and the same kind of thing. That's why it resonates. I just can't even believe how you say this, like, you know, like just bluntly, he's probably going to die. And she tells me this, she's told me this many times, and it was literally like blunt, like, he's probably going to die. And if he doesn't, he's going to be deaf and blind and so on and so on. And it's just like, God, what a tactless, you know, way to deliver that.
Yeah.
But so she went through, that's why I asked that question before. She went through this process where, you know, she was broken. Like, she was so heartbroken and so sad, and spent day in and day out in the hospital believing, you know, I'm passing her energy life source into me to stop that, or whatever she could, you know? And so then I went forward, and, you know, after the long story short, coming back, the doctors were just like baffled. Like we talk about every day, baffled. But they were just like, this shouldn't have happened. You know, that I had 20/20 vision, that I could hear, and everything was, you know, which is quite a bit different than your experience. Sure. But in a small way, I feel like that has.
Well, you overcame the odds and you
proved
them wrong. So in that way, it's very similar. Yeah,
exactly. And I just feel like that drove me to be what I am today, you know, I see that in you as well. And I think what we're doing, and that, you know, that we're fighting for the underdog, that we're trying to do right by people. And I just, you know, whether that's all of it or not, I think that drove us to where we are in a large way. It really does, you know, shape who you are.
Yeah. Well, and the other part that I didn't mention that I think has tremendous parallel is that because the doctor read the titer incorrectly, if he had read it correctly, he would have advised my mom to have an abortion.
Mm.
And my parents sued for my birth. So it was called a wrongful birth case.
Wow.
That's what it was called. The lawyer was the same defender for the Larry Flint Hustler case at the same time.
Yeah. How funny.
Yeah. And that was what they had called it. It was a wrongful birth, because the alternative would have been for my mom to abort me. And, you know, I always preface this by saying, you know, I don't think like my parents really thought I was a wrongful birth. It's not that, you know, this was just the angle that the lawyers took, because they did feel that there were going to be a lot of medical, you know, complications and expenses ahead. So, but that was the angle they took, because the alternative was to abort me.
Mm. Ah, it's just so, it's just so, you know, gives you that feeling, especially for me, for coming, you know, having that in my history. You know, it's I'm so glad that there are people out there that still think for themselves, you know, more of them today, hopefully.
Yeah. And I mean, for me, when you talk about like shaping your, I think your perspective and your worldview, you know, I don't think that there are, I don't believe God makes mistakes. And I think that, you know, I'm here for, there's the saying, like, you know, you're born for a time such as this.
Mm-hmm.
And I really do feel, I feel everybody has a purpose. And I always say my spirit like wanted to be here. Like I was fighting to be here. And I feel like that's always running for me.
Yeah.
I'm fighting to be here, and I'm fighting to do the best I can with what I have and make the most difference that I can, you know, using what I was given. I always say that, you know, all human beings are born with unique gifts and talents, and it is incumbent upon each of us to develop those, to hone those, so that we can be of contribution to the world.
And yeah, exactly. And there's a meaning, there's a reason that we have those to affect some kind of, like, if you believe that, and I truly do, that there's more. I mean, I think we're seeing that every possible way today. There's so much that we don't understand that we pretend we do, and that our energy or whatever else, it influences the world around us. And I think that that's like I said in the beginning, like, I truly believe that's driving us to do what we're doing. And in Pirate Free Media coming soon, I think that's exciting, because it's, you know, the beginning of something. And I think that's where this is going to go. You know, we're out there fighting for the people that can't fight for themselves.
Absolutely. Know? And Gordon. Fighting for people to express free will, take ownership of free will.
Right.
And that, I think that's what it always comes back to.
Yeah.
That we have choices, and We get to every second, every minute of every day, we get to choose. And hopefully you choose good, you know, right?
Yeah, I agree. Well, I wanted to get into as well the censorship aspect of this, because that's something that I think we focus on Moving Target in general, because that's what the name is really about. You know, the fact that we're trying to constantly, you know, get the same message out from a different thing or different, you know, pirate stream, pirate channel. And so I first wanted to start off with, you could just tell us what happened with your account, seeing as how this is a new, the whole Twitter discussion is newly, is fresh, or whatever the term is, newly being discussed because of Elon Musk and the saving of the platform. And we'll get into that in a second, and whether you think that's happening or not. But so your account was censored. How did that actually happen? What was the argument, and was it recent?
So it's kind of funny because this just shows, like, it's so arbitrary. There's no real justification for, not at least in you know, an honest sense of who they go after and who they shut down. Mm-hmm. But I was responding to actually to Monica Perez, and it was about polio. Mm-hmm. And so I had shared a tweet from Sebastian Powell, who's been on my podcast a couple of times, and they kicked me off, and I appealed. And they said that, you know, it was COVID misinformation. And I responded saying that because I appealed saying, why am I kicked off? You know, this is completely, you know, I linked an article reference and they said that it was COVID misinformation. And I said I was talking about polio, not COVID. Like,
completely
different stratosphere. Oh, wow. Not even the same, like, frame at all. And they responded saying, you know, that I was gone.
It didn't matter, maybe, right? Yeah, you know, it's clumsily like saying COVID.
Yeah, exactly. We don't like something, it's COVID, you know?
My God, it's just so ridiculous. And see, this is what we're hoping we're getting into. Would you just open the door for her really quickly? So go ahead and say hi to Scott out there. Sorry, Sierra Vagabond is giving me some trouble.
Yeah, okay.
Go ahead and close it. But so I think the interesting thing about this is how... Now I'm all worried about it. Anyway, hopefully, do me a favor. Keep
go ahead and keep talking about your Twitter account.
Okay, yeah. So it was
what happened after the censorship?
Yeah, so I mean, I can't get back on. They basically, like, you know, if I try to make a different different account, they just tell me that this seems to be linked to a banned account and you can't get back on. So kind of the same thing happens with YouTube.
That's what's happening with me on every time I make a new pirate account. It's the same thing, except happening now. I have seen some differences in general. Mm-hmm. I think what's interesting is that this argument about Elon Musk suddenly saving the day and rescue. I mean, I'm really hopeful that happens. I'm genuinely I'm not even necessarily feeling like that's not happening. I'm just trying to remain objective, you know, right? I feel good. We have thoughts on them, sure.
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts. So there's this meme, and I think it kind of encapsulates very much how I feel about it. It's like, it's this guy and Elon saying, thank you so much for standing up for free speech. And he responds, and it's like this cloud over his head and goes, data. I feel like it's like Beavis and Butthead. Like,
wait, what happened? Yeah. It was Elon Musk responded?
Yeah. I mean, it's a meme. So it's like the guy says, you know, thank you so much for valuing free speech.
Right.
And there's a cloud like over, you know, his thought and it says data. But in my head, I hear it like Beavis and Butthead, like data.
Right, right. Well, I mean, it's like, I think implying that data is the only reason, it's your information that he only cares about, right?
Yeah. Well, so the way I see it is, you know, I think people are very familiar with the terms like, you know, communism, socialism, fascism, capitalism, corporate capitalism, which is really just fascism, right? They have all these terms, but I think what has happened, and I do think this is by design, if you read the texts of the elites, they say that they're pragmatists, not ideologues. You know, it's about them gaining control for the New World Order. And the New World Order is a one world government. That's what they want. They want total control globally. Mm-hmm. And I think that what they've done is they've set up this dialectical paradigm. And if you know anything about the Hegelian dialectic, it's not so much about the two sides. It's about them competing to create the negation.
Right.
So Hegel himself actually said abstract, negative, concrete. Mm-hmm. He didn't actually say, you know, thesis, synthesis, antithesis. Right. That was Kant. But I think that's what it's about. It's about the negation so they can come in with their solution,
right,
which is the technocracy. Mm-hmm. And that's what they want to rule the world. And they talk about, I mean, for the past 100 years, they've been talking about the technocracy,
right,
and how that's going to be the ruling government ruling kind of a system that mm-hmm. will take. And it, now with AI, you know, it's going to be kind of like an AI run technocratic feudalism, essentially what they yeah. want to put us into. And, you know, transhumanism is kind of the conduit, and that then it will lead to a post-human world. And they pretty openly said all of this.
Oh yeah. They just use different terms. I mean, it's literally just saying, well, they're saying all that, but for your benefit. That's basically right, what they're right. doing. It's
yeah,
like,
this will benefit you. Yeah. Because I really want to be a serf and work right. with machine. And, but Elon is a technocrat.
Right, and right. So he's an elitist. He's in those circles. I mean, that's the reality.
He's not only an elitist and in those circles, but he's literally a technocrat. I mean, right. that's, you know, he talks about the joys of transhumanism. When he talks about Twitter, I mean, there's this clip of him saying how in China they have a WeChat.
Yeah, I saw that.
And, mm-hmm. right? And it's like, well, we don't have anything like that. And so they were kind of like, oh, so basically you want to make Twitter into WeChat. And he's like, yeah, really better, you know. But that's, WeChat controls everything.
Exactly. So and that, but see, that's what he's thinking about. He yeah. see, now here's the right, the objective way to look at this, in my opinion, is that it's certainly possible. I don't think this, that he just is not necessarily excited or invested in those ideas because he's part of the technocratic thing. Or it could just be that he sees the value in those things or wants to use them yeah. or, you know, that's possible. I don't yeah. think that's the case though. Just to say that so we can, you know, we're not arguing, you know, for sure Elon's intentions, but yeah. at the end of the day, it's pretty clear that there's an overlap and interest in, I mean, like even like the Starlink conversation, yeah. even though there's this weird dispute now going on between the government and him, he's still involved in that process. And so it's hard to see him as not part of it or outside the effort, you know, but it could be that he just is, he's the richest person in the world. So it's kind of hard to not have him inserted in these things. And, you know, I'm leaving the caveat for it's possible that he'll surprise me, you know? So, but sure. what's happening on Twitter is a gauge, and we're going to see what happens next. And I'll get into that in a second. But I think what we all out of the gate need to be concerned about is, you know, this is what people hate about this, is they don't want to think this far into it, but right. it's just as possible that he could come out and let Alex Jones back on and let yeah. everything happen and then still be the problem that will end up driving us into the technical, you know, like that lets people believe it because he does it. And it,
that's ultimately what I kind of see happening. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think he's being as much of like a mastermind behind all that. I don't know that that's necessarily
right.
how it's going. I think it's more I think what you said, he believes these things. He does. I mean, he talks about transhumanism being a wonderful thing. Mm-hmm. You know, his baby mama Grimes wrote several songs all about like, we appreciate power. And it's all about, you know, the transhuman agenda
mm-hmm.
and how they're going to essentially become gods, right? You know, just like Yuval Noah Harari
right.
says, you know,
he's a good example of overlap with Elon Musk too. Like whether or not yeah. he believes this is like the right path, or he's just pointing out what he sees happening. There's an argument there.
I think they really believe it. I think, you know, I think it behooves us to take these people at their word.
I agree.
And read it as, and what I often talk about when I talk about, you know, a lot of people talk about the spiritual warfare, and I think there's very much a spiritual battle happening, mm-hmm. but I don't see it as these people thinking they're doing something that's so dark, and they think this is the best way. So
some of them,
like the Gnostics,
I think anyway,
right?
yeah. I think some of them, I think anyway, but
there's always, you know, malevolent characters and
I do think
psychopaths.
So.
Yeah, no, yeah, I do yeah. believe that they absolutely exist. But I think a lot of them, mm-hmm. you know, are really
most.
Like the Gnostics. They, mm-hmm. they're true Luciferians, and it's not because they think, you know, they're going to hurt everyone. They think ultimately that's their worldview, and they ultimately think that's the better way because they mm-hmm. think they're so resentful of God. They think that God has hurt man because he's limited our scope of knowledge. But Lucifer, mm-hmm.
right? The classic definition of yeah,
the true Gnostics,
right? And right. Well, what really, you're saying is that's what you believe. These people,
I think these people really believe that. You mm-hmm. know, when you listen to Yuval Noah Harari, who, by the way, I think is really just a mouthpiece. But
I do too.
You know,
yeah.
I think, but he's been appointed to say these things. But I think he genuinely believes that this is great. Now, he talks about how these gods are going to supersede the biblical God because they can, you know, biblical God only can create organic matter, and they can create inorganic
right,
matter.
Right.
They can, you know, do all these things, including reproduce. And I think they really believe this is the way. Like, we're just enhancing. When they talk about transhumanism, it's a, you know, bionic enhancement. Mm-hmm. The problem is they're stripping humanity of the very thing that makes us human.
Exactly.
And you know, in my worldview, that's not a positive thing. But I think for them, they really think this is the next phase,
yeah.
and it's a great evolution. And that's not to say, sure, there are just some malevolent people. There are some true psychopaths.
And I know you knew, I know you think already feel that way, but I would also add, and I think you agree with this too, is that that in no way is giving them like a pass or anything. Like, right. So they're clearly, they may think this is the right thing to do, but they're still willing to let people die to accomplish it or whatever.
Well, and they think that that's for the best.
Right.
The
right.
Greater good. And they have to get rid of the useless eaters.
Right.
So that, you know, the rest can thrive. And they think, you know, the ends justify the means, and they see the, you know, the end game as being just such a glorious thing, such a glorious result that it's worth it. You know, it's like a Solomon saying we have to crack a few eggs, you know, in order to make an omelet.
Sadly, I think that the people that I would argue are really at the top of this agenda are not necessarily in the mindset that this is right for anybody. Like that's my perspective. And I hate to be pessimistic about it. I just think there's so many examples of these people. You know, it's ultimate. I mean, you could maybe argue that they think like absolute totalitarian control of everything you do in your life would lead them to make a better world. I just don't see how that even adds up when you realize what they're truly trying to accomplish for themselves. They're control. They're megalomaniacs. I mean, that's what this comes down to, you know? So it's like
they genuinely believe. I think they have such a low view of the masses that they genuinely seem to believe that the world would be a better place.
Right.
Because I mean, you don't know what's best for you.
Right,
I'm the expert. So I will tell you and I will determine what is best for you.
Yeah.
I think they really, they have, because they are megalomaniacs, they just have such a, you know, a disdainful view of
humanity. They hate people like us. They really do. I mean, it's like a disdain.
They hate people. Yeah, I think that's why they want a post-human world. They hate humanity.
Or yeah, that's the way to say it. I mean, I think they hate individuals that like us too, but they hate the idea, their weakness, or their potential demise, or the fact that they don't know what's happening next. Like, they're controlled, you know? And so I think that's one of the things I think drives a lot of these people at the top, especially the older ones, is that they've lived a life that's not so nice. And they're going, okay, what if I'm wrong? Like, what if I am going, or maybe they already know they're not wrong, or that they are wrong, or however you want to frame that they realize that they want to circumvent the judgment, essentially, right? From a religious perspective or whatever else you want to look at it from. And so they want to be able to, using what they have mastered or control in this world, to make sure they never have to leave it. And that's, you know, that
they want complete reign over earth, right?
Right.
And what Satan's supposed to have control
right.
over.
Right. It's an inherently, it shows you inherently that they know that there's something, what they're doing is not necessarily, it's not, they're bad people, in my opinion. And I think this is a way to make sure they don't have to potentially come up to judgment in that regard. Now, that is a religious perspective I'm a Christian, but I think that for some people, otherwise they can just realize that it's not rooted in anything positive for anybody other than themselves.
Well, and this is what I would say. You don't have to be a Christian or even have, you know, a biblical worldview to understand that there are people who really do worship Satan and people who really do worship.
Yeah. Is that even in question? Like, I think it's very, very.
But I think a lot of people who don't have the religious framework, they have such a hard time they're like, because they don't necessarily understand it or believe that that exists. You may not believe it. That doesn't mean there aren't people who genuinely believe.
And that's always the way to end that point. Anything we're talking about is it's really irrelevant from the mindset of whether they're doing it in regard, like whether they believe, like it, whether it's real or not.
Right.
If they believe it's real, or like the occult traditions and so on, if they believe doing so leads to something, then that's why they're doing it. So as long as they believe it, then it's important, you know, because they're still doing it.
And it's still driving all of their actions.
Right. In a large degree.
Them is this worldview. And, you know, this brings to the conversation. People always want to know, like, who's the ultimate puppet master that's like pulling all the strings. And I don't necessarily think it's like a one person or entity.
It's much more complicated.
What they all have is a shared worldview.
Right.
It is a Gnostic, you know, whether Satan or Lucifer or, you know, there are different variations of it, but it's all kind of a very similar worldview.
Or even not religious, or rather the way Harari goes with it, that their religion is themselves and the future and the technocratic transhumanist mindset where they are.
I mean, that is
essentially. Yeah. I mean, there's ways you could, I argue there are people involved with that that don't see it that way is my point,
they
but
might
you're right.
Not,
yeah.
But that
right.
Still would be how you would define
it. Yeah. Well, to finish up though, I wanted to get into, so Alan McLeod put out a tweet, basically said, since Elon has now bought this website, I think it's important to highlight how he is not some radical outsider, but a crucial part of the U.S. surveillance and national security state. And he's got a great thread. Go ahead. You want a comment?
I'll just say really quickly. So this probably is not going to help out my reinstatement, but I had tweeted a while ago. I said, it's very fitting for a DARPA operative to buy a piece of the DARPA operation.
Yeah. Right. Back in the family. Right. Works out. But yeah, I'm feeling the same way. I petitioned, I put a new appeal out to see if it worked for my old original account, you know, right. for the 60,000 followers. I forget what it was at. And I even tagged it and said, Elon, do that just to see what happens. Yeah, I'm not hopeful. I don't, because I'm even sharing his tweet right here by Alan McLeod and saying, look
it
at him.
Though to accept everybody,
I agree
that will further, I think, what his goals are.
I agree.
I mean, if you want a WeChat, everybody's got to be in it,
right? Here's a good example, though. Actually, let's just start with this.
Sorry.
That no, it's okay. I mean, we're not, we have to end at a certain moment, but I pointed out that Elon Musk tweeted out today. Yeah. He said, to be super clear, we have not yet made any changes to Twitter's content moderation policies. That's despite literally every partisan report. Oh my God, everything's changed. The world is now clear. You know, it's like, yeah, I joke about how James Woods came out and a lot of other people. He's just really prominent. Remember, like right when this was announced, Twitter, he made by Twitter and he was like, everything's changed. Like, it's like, come on, guys, we jumped the gun a little bit. And here is there's a tweet that I'm showing here. It says today he's responding to Musk saying he hasn't changed anything. Now, maybe he's lying, by the way. Maybe he's lying. But this guy goes, today, the bot activity went down by over 80% from my observation. That used to be all over my account, but they're no longer there. How is that possible? Did you turn something off? Now, he could be making it up. Elon could be lying. Or maybe there are people within there that are no longer doing that because they're afraid they'll be seen. There's all these possibilities.
Sure.
But I find it interesting.
Maybe it hasn't come into full effect.
Yeah. But I think it makes the most sense that because he fired executives, that maybe these people are now like, whoa, let's pull back on the censorship tactics because I don't want to be seen. I mean,
I don't want to be fired.
Yeah. I mean, who knows? But I think the real point is that it is still happening. Scott Ritter was censored today. He shared a tweet that says, I'm back. Test, test, test. Bucha was a war crime. Ukraine did it. Test, test, test. And I'm good because that's what happened. I mean, that's proven. In my opinion, I think this is undeniable. Maxar Technology, CIA satellite was I went over all this on the show.
Our CIA has been fighting proxy wars.
Oh, yeah. For sure. The point there is that the Maxar Technology satellite was the key to how they argued they could tell it was Russia. And it was proven their satellite wasn't even in the right spot to be able to see it for the time they said it was there. I mean, of course, they don't talk about this. But Scott Ritter points this out as well. But he got censored. Said this is gone. Twitter deleted it. And so I'm like, interesting. So is Ukraine too far? Or is you know, Musk's claiming he hasn't changed anything, but we know he's involved in Ukraine to a degree, and he's pretty pro-Ukraine war. So sure. What do you think?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. One thing, and this shows the danger of where we're headed,
right.
Because AI is controlling a lot of us, not even people.
Yeah, good
and
point.
Right? So an AI is it magnifies exponentially. Mm-hmm. So when you set the program, it starts collecting data. And right now, they're just collecting infinite data.
Yeah.
And they're going to run into a problem where they realize they can't interpret and manage all of this data.
Like the war on terror thing where they've scooped up everybody.
It's like a drug for them.
Yeah.
Like, you know, somebody who's a coke addict and they're just like, I need more, I need more. And that's where we're
it's,
at.
It's the control part of it. It's omnipotent, control, essentially.
To control with it. But I think they're going to run into a problem because the technology is not so advanced where they can interpret and then, if you know, apply this data that they've collected.
Yeah.
But I think that we're already seeing that. So who knows what they've done with these algorithms because they're already set in motion. And how much can they manage them? How much can they change them? How quickly can all that happen?
How
clean will that be?
Yeah.
You know, how... you know, just because you change the algorithm doesn't necessarily mean it's going to have the effect that you had intended.
Yeah. Or at that point, same point, or if it'll be changed for the better. I don't know why we assume that this is going to, like, it could just as simply flip-flop. And I think, like, I feel like even you and I may have talked about this, but the idea that if it, like, suddenly tomorrow, all of a sudden, he lets all these people back on, and then, but there starts to be these subtle censorships of specific left-leaning people. Sure. And of course they're going to say, oh, I don't know, it could just people are still on Twitter. I'm not control yet. You know, and they'll be like, it must have been, you know, it'll always be, it was Musk if they want it to be, it's the bots if it's not, or, you know, whatever else. Yeah. And he's just going to be like, I can't control everything. I'm not the one doing it. You know, and it goes on like that. And then it just simply becomes the reverse of what it is today. Okay. And, you know, because there are people that are on the left that have got censored. Even though, you know, so it's not all in one, but my worry is that happens and then it just becomes the right just going, la, 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 I don't see it because they're happy to see the other side censored, you know, and it's just this teeter totter that never ends. And the point is censorship still continues, you know,
I mean,
and then we get caught in the middle as nonpartisan.
And I mean, if you're for free speech, then you're for free speech. It's not when it serves you or when it's your cause that you're, you know, championing,
right.
You know, that's the problem. And you don't, I think a lot of these people miss that they prop things up as the quote unquote, like untouchable at while simultaneously, this is the dialectic, incendiary, the incitement. And they want the parties to be, the two sides to be clashing. Oh, no, that's my sacred cow. You can't, you know, you have to censor them. They can't say that.
Right.
And then the other side is like, you know, oh, my gosh, this was the worst thing ever. You know, they play into each other.
Always. Yeah.
And
I think that's the primary purpose.
Yeah. What?
No, go ahead.
Yeah, so I said it wrong. But yeah, like the sacred cow people who are like, no, that has to be censored. Then the other people who buy the narrative and then they're clashing against each other. And then ultimately, what is the solution that they'll propose? Censorship.
Right.
And I think they do this. These are kind of the, you know, it's the cognitive infiltration and the false flags essentially intended to propagate censorship. And you can't, if you really stand for free speech, it has to be universal. You stand for free speech.
I agree. And it's easy to point out right now that because it's advantageous to the Republican side. And maybe, and again, I'll always point, maybe I'm wrong and they do believe it. And I'll stand up and say, I was wrong. They're fighting on our front. But the point is that, you know, you see this kind of ebb and flow always in the left-right paradigm. And so all it will take is, you know, they go forward and they act like they're fighting for your medical freedom, your free speech. And then eventually there's some talking point or Trump says something or some new moment where they then rationalize a small part of it. Like I always point out the absurdity of having Guantanamo Bay from both sides be acknowledged as the scar on our history. And then the moment that Trump gets elected, it's a signal of freedom. And it's like, how can you be that easily swayed? You know, we just got to start thinking past the savior complex, I think, is the real point.
And then to tie into, you know, the point you brought up about our stories driving this. And I think it's a testament to the spirit of humanity and, you know, that we each are unique and we're each a miracle. Mm-hmm. You know, I talk about this when I did my speech, that there's a 1 in 400 trillion chance of being born. And now scientists are saying it's 1 in 400 quadrillion.
Wow.
No, human beings can't fathom what that is.
Yeah.
Those odds are so tremendous. And I think it's arguably declining even further currently by design. You know, the eugenics movement, the neo-Malthusians are really hard at work to deteriorate the fertility of our species. And I think that this, you know, both of our stories really talk about this, how, you know, because we are miracles, you know, there's something really special about that.
Right.
And you know, we want to preserve the free will of humanity.
Yeah, so. Right. I agree. And it's exactly what we all need to be thinking about right now is, you know, what these choices truly mean going forward.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think because I mean, I'll speak for myself, but I think I see this in you is that because I overcame such great odds to be here, I never take life for granted.
Right. Right.
You know, life, health, you know, that's it's a gift. And I want to see it. You know, I want to see it bloom and blossom and thrive for many more, you know, generations to come.
I agree. And again, I just, you know, the every little choice we're making today, you know, again, the injection is primarily in my mind right now, but that, you know, they will coerce you and force you into these choices and rationalize why it's in your best interest. We just need to, you know, question everything. As always, you know, we literally take every single action, choice, election, individual representative, and whether you think they're on your side or not, whether they've proven over the last 40 years that they're on your side, the next thing they do should be questioned like the first thing. And that's how this needs to be engaged with. I mean, that's how it's always should have been. I don't know why we trust any of these people. Now, that doesn't have to be like a negative thing. Just we have to have skepticism. That's the foundational concept of a representative government, if that's what we're talking about, you know?
Critical thinking.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Exactly. That's why they want you to be you're a conspiracy theorist if you question or research or think. No, that's what's paradigm or paramount, excuse me. But as always, I think it's just important that these conversations continue. And please continue to check out Courtney Turner's podcast and her work, and look out for the new show that we're going to be doing with the three of us and the Pirate Street Media work. Anything else you want to leave us with today on upcoming things other than that, or, you know, your website or anything else you want to share?
My website is CourtneyTurner.com, but it's spelled CourtneyTurner.com. I am actually going to be launching a WIM again. So we'll be on the lookout for that. It's WIM, WIM, what is movement?
Okay.
So yeah, I'm going to be relaunching that. And we have some things in the works, and I'm going to have other events coming up. So yeah.
Awesome. Well, thanks for being here. And
thank you.
As always, question everything, come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.